Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Functional Health Podcast with Ben Atkinson. This week, I was delighted to speak to Dr. Olli Servieri from the Biohacking Center in Finland. He's a medical doctor, health coach, and lead author of many of the biohacking publications. We take a deep dive into the fascinating world of cold water therapy and the truly astonishing benefits of cold and how to best experience it yourself. The audio gets a bit funky at times due to some issues with Olli's mic, but we get over them pretty quickly. So if you can stick with me, I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Let's get into it. Olli, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, Ben. Happy to be here. You know, it's been a while since I've done a podcast, so this is a pleasure.
Happy days.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very glad to have you on the show. It was such a pleasure to meet you at the Health Optimization Summit earlier this year and the rest of the Biohacking Center team. What's been going on with you and the center?
Yeah, quite a bit. to summarize it, we had a blast in Amsterdam, the Biohacker Summit. 1,960 people were there. Expanding consciousness was the theme. From 60 different countries, it was truly a transformative experience for me personally and for many others. And like 5 great days, like the pre-events and after events and the conference. So that was really, really, really cool. We launched our new app called Holo Habits. So you can actually download it already, and there's free content. So in the app, the idea is to have all your data in there eventually, and then there are like habit challenges, so how you could change your habits based on your data. So that's going to be a transformative as well. So holohabits.com. So that's what we've been doing for the past 3-4 months. Now it's out and we're developing that, and I'm really positive about that. It's going to change many people's lives. So many things to do, of course. The ever forthcoming book, the Resilient Being book. Hopefully, we get it out next year. It's been a long process because it's so massive, and we want to produce the highest quality text and like literature possible in this field.
Yeah, like all your resources, they're amazing, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, great stuff. And I'm really, really looking forward to doing a deep dive into the benefits of cold exposure. I know you're very much an authority in this space. What originally interested you in cold itself? Or getting freezing cold?
Yeah. The first thing I recall was that I had some skin issues when I was like a teenager, maybe 14, 15. And my father's doctor, professor, we went to see like dermatologist. I got some like all kinds of creams and stuff, but the number one thing that I still do was just say that, hey, like, wash your face when you're done washing your face, like, with warm water, always finish with the cold water.
Yep.
And that felt really good. And then I began doing like these facial like dips, so I just had like in the sink only cold water, and I put my face there for a while, like didn't breathe, and then get up, and that felt amazing. And I think I got introduced to cold showers in my 20s, like early 20s, and after that I've been using like every day, always finishing the shower to the cold because it feels so good. So it's no matter how like exhausted or like drained or something you are, it's always a refreshment. But to more extreme colds, maybe about 10 years ago, I remember reading Jack Cruz, maybe a controversial figure in this space, but he wrote extensively about the cold thermogenesis. I think that's already like 10 years ago, and I was like, this is really interesting. And then I began slowly incorporate that. Of course, I've been going ice swimming every now and then because it's tradition in Finland, and it's very cold in the winter, and we have very cold lakes, like hundreds of thousands of lakes. So people go there, and you know, we mix sauna and cold exposure, like ice swimming. So it's kind of like very natural to us. And cold as a form of therapy has been with me for quite a long time. But maybe in the past 5-6 years, I've been focusing on that on a regular basis. Like even in the summer, there's always some way to do it. Of course, it's not. I don't have any like these super expensive cold exposure tubs. Like they're 5K easily. But you know, having some ice, having like a place you can sit and just put cold water there, and so that's usually doing the trick. And of course, cold showers. And now I can't wait the winter time come to actually get like 0 degrees Celsius, because it's a different ball game than like say 8 or 10.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's how things are. Now I'm doing not on a daily basis, because I don't think this should be done every day, because it's kind of like a hormetic stressor. You don't want to overdo exercise or like plant chemicals. Like if you do it too much or take too much like sun, I think it's gonna be causing some harm. But yeah, yesterday when I got back to home from work, I went to my ice tub, which is this Lumi therapy. Like it's it's kind of like a barrel, but it's the cost is like 100 euros.
I've seen them, like the that. Black ones with the white rim. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have very cold water there, some ice, and I, you know, just went there, refreshing myself, and then just getting warm. Usually go to sauna, but yesterday I went to infrared sauna. So it's kind of like a daily practice for me, but I don't want to do like extreme cold immediately when I wake up, because it's a stressor. It's a shock. It's a stressor. I don't want to elevate the cortisol levels too much, but I do the cold shower when I've done like all the other stuff in the morning.
Yep, that makes
usually
sense.
After that, just go to work.
Ollie, the microphone's doing something strange again, mate.
Okay. Let's...
Yeah, we're going to have to change microphone just because that one's being strange.
yeah. I will ask Dave, what's the deal with this, so he can adjust this.
Yeah, we'll blame Tamu. I actually need to email him, so I'll tell him.
You bastard, what did you do?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember, so that's interesting you said about cortisol and the kind of hormetic stressor. I definitely want to get into that a little bit later on the podcast, because I think there's some nuances there as well. Because nothing seems to wake you up more than a cold shower in the morning. But the origins of cold therapy I found fascinating, which you presented on at HOS earlier this year. Where did it come from? Like, that was so intriguing to me.
Yeah, there's quite a bit. Like when I dug into the history and the literature, I found this like first evidence even back to 3500 BC, like before Christ. So that's like some 5,000 plus years ago. Yeah. There's this mystic paper called the Edwin Smith Papyrus, which is, I don't know what the language is, some maybe Arabic, or it's pretty like hieroglyphic looking like, but they, based on the text, like they had like very, quite a few references for using cold as therapy, like spinal cord injuries and something like that. And the papyrus itself, like paper, had been in the tombs in Egypt for like thousands of years. And this guy called Edwin Smith, sold it in 1862. And then I think it was translated somehow to like witness that, hey, yeah, we have done it. It's not a new thing. And even like, of course, like mentioning Hippocrates, it's a bit of boring, but still in his medical school of medicine, they used cold therapy for different kind of things. And tetanus, which is interesting. Luckily, we have vaccines for that, and it's not as prevalent as probably had there, but cold apparently helped to treat that. And take a look at different cultures, like all the ancient cultures had some form of hydrotherapy, including cold and hot. So it's a heat alteration therapies. So could be mental issues or just like overall medicinal issues and whatnot. So it even was like a cure for everything. At some point in some cultures, like ancient Chinese, Egyptians, Greek, even Romans. So,
yeah, and even if it's not a cure, it was almost like a remedy. So it helps alleviate some form of issue, even for a short period of time. And it is fascinating, a lot of these kind of ancient cultures and traditions, the things that they used to practice, we now have science for now, backing them up. Especially as it pertains to cold and heat, right? And when you said Hippocrates, it is funny because it does seem boring. Everyone says the same old thing. Health starts in the gut, all these kinds of things. He's had this amazing innate wisdom.
Indeed, yeah. So it's, if we think about this time, when there's like the information, how fast it spreads, suddenly like cold is a trend. Like it doesn't mean that much when somebody picks the team and starts to research and hey, there's something like this, and then suddenly it's like everything everybody is doing, and the industry goes on, hey, when I got like, let's say the Lumi therapy, like this team you can sit on and have cold water in there. Now there are like 10, 20 different companies who actually produce the same things. So it's interesting how these kind of phenomena develop. And then let's say another example is NAD plus.
Yes.
Like all these precursors, everything related to anti-aging. And it's kind of like that's the wave of the time that we are living now. People want to they want to have like good things that can do to prevent stuff. So I see cold as a preventive method from different illnesses and ailments and inflammation and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we get back to like the history, the recent ones, there are different, let's say some spine surgeries, like Temple Fei. Mm-hmm. I was like, is that a name? But apparently that is. Neurosurgeon, like he used, I think it's he, hypothermia or head injuries.
Wow.
And another neurosurgeon like Irvin Cooper, 61, like he had this cryoprobe surgery system. So using like cryo, very cold surgery. And I remember when I was medical school, if you had like brain trauma, you would there were like this hypothermic induced condition, let's say like 35 degrees Celsius to prevent the injury of the brain tissue to develop any further. So it kind of reduced the biochemistry and like the process. So I don't know if that's not used that much anymore. But it's still, I think there's some neuroprotective effects of cold in the brain.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. So is it that they're preserving neurons, as in it helps with neuroinflammation, or is it promoting neurogenesis, the growth of new nerve cells?
It depends on what you aim for. In this case, like in the medical case, it was just preventing like or slowing down the metabolism there to prevent like the injury and the tissue, like mm-hmm. destroying any further, helping it to heal. It could increase a little bit of like BDNF and like these neural factors. But if we jump into what's behind like cold and the effects, there are different things. One is the nervous system that's happening in there, the autonomic nervous system response. And one thing, if you just take a look at the biochemistry, is like the cold shock proteins. So that's really also one thing we can discuss.
Oh yeah,
and of course, like the hormetic dose, it's very important. beneficial dose, you do it a little bit, then you may be extending it. But if you do it like, let's say, spend an hour, well, I don't know who spends an hour except Wim
Hof. Apart from Wim Hof, yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I'm jumping around here, but I'm reading this book from a Finnish 60-year-old guy who went totally nuts with cold, and he sat in his like the fridge. I think it was like this fridge for an hour in the 0 degree. And he developed kind of this different vipassana and breathing techniques. And of course, basically different breathing techniques to slow down the activation of the nervous system. And actually he uses a specific method of breathing to increase the carbon dioxide levels in the blood. And that is protective of the peripheral system of getting like hypothermia. And also it keeps the warm, it keeps the body much warm. So it was really interesting to read this book, how critical the carbon dioxide is. If you ventilate too much, it's a lot harder to tolerate the cold. Mm-hmm. If you get it up, how you can get it up is it's like doing this buteyko breathing. Let's say have a few deep breaths, like
then
when you exhale and then just hold as long as you can. So that is raising the CO2 levels. So you can increase the toleration like step by step by using these breathing methods and different kind of techniques. This is just one example. And he describes all these kind of things. What I think Wim Hof does is that he just uses his mind. Of course, he has breathing techniques, but it's not involved. He has the Wim Hof breathing, I guess.
Yeah.
And then you hold, but it's a bit different. It's I don't think he is consciously trying to elevate CO2 in the blood. It's more about like control your mind and everything will follow. But if you combine these two, then
exactly
that's the way to go, and incrementally increase in dose.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wouldn't recommend anyone to jump into an ice bath for an hour straight off the bat, because
you're going to cause harm. You can actually do it. You're going to get hypothermic for sure.
Yeah.
You're going to get shivering, so that's not even possible, like if you're not... Yeah, I haven't pushed myself, like personally, just to see. Maybe 10 minutes, I think it's max, but it wasn't 0 degrees. It was more like 4 or something like that, which is different from 0.
Yeah.
So it's...
I did...
Yeah.
So I've used ice after a marathon one time, and I just filled my bath up with ice. I didn't actually measure the temperature, and I sat in it, so probably just below my sternum for about 15 minutes, and that was too much. I was desperate to get the inflammation out of my legs, but then I quickly paid the price because I was shivering for about 4 hours afterwards. It was not
so
good.
You went hypothermic, yeah. So that's a sign of hypothermia, which you should avoid. So a good rule here is that get out of the cold before you start shivering. But there's a difference. Like, it's not just nuance. Does it feel cold, or are you cold?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it feels, yeah, for sure, it feels cold. But I'm not cold. You know that there's a difference. We have different Finnish words in Finnish, like Finland for that. But of course, it feels cold. But if you start shivering, then you're getting cold.
Yes.
You're getting hypothermic. So you would want to get out before the shivering starts. But you can practice that the shivering doesn't start if you do these breathing practices beforehand, like very long exhales,
mm-hmm.
holding when you have exhaled, and just like increasing the carbon dioxide in the blood. That helps a lot. Also, it calms down the mind. Panic attacks, most often or very, very, very often caused by too low levels of CO2.
Oh, fascinating.
Why you breathe in the paperback? when you're having a panic attack. You elevate the CO2 because you're not like ventilating it out. People are like two shallow breaths, like just inhaling and not exhaling the oxygen out. So all these kind of things make sense. It's pretty interesting that I've been reading this book and now we have this podcast without like I just got the book from him and he was like, hey, take a look. This is what I've experienced and done. So it's Marcus Appelberg. I think it's his name.
Okay, I'll link to his book if it's available to people. I'll link to it in the show notes.
It's in Finnish. So I don't know if it's
well, I'm sure we'll have some Finnish listeners because you're on, so might be beneficial to some people. And then hopefully it'll be translated into another language, fingers crossed. Let's go back to like what's actually happening when you get, experience cold, because you get this huge gasp reflex. Anyone who has been in a cold bath, like your immediate response is to go like, what's going on there? What's happening? Why?
Well, it's a shock. Like you're trying to protect yourself from dying. It is like a natural reaction. Like, what the fuck is happening? And it's also has to do a little bit the mammalian dive reflex. If you like put your head down, then you get like the. But the thing is that you just begin to practice and control that. And the breathing before that helps, like it get your parasympathetic system a little bit higher, with long exhale, CO2 a little bit higher. And then just, of course, it feels cold, but when it's, this reflex starts to go, it just needs to...
Yeah, slow it right down.
And do not like do too long inhales, because that's again raising the O2, which we don't want to do in this, but just like...
Yeah, and for everyone,
and you can
listening,
do like this shifting, like
yeah. For some reason, your microphone's not picking up the breaths. But for everyone listening, Ollie's breathing, doing some breathing techniques which we cannot hear. But
okay. I destroyed my real microphone, so we have to do like go with this webcam microphone. But yeah, I'm like shifting between my. Teeth and exhalation like intentionally like making it very long.
I need to try that and maybe it will help me stay in cold longer and maybe not get cold myself.
It keeps the periphery open,
right? Like
if you raise the CO2, it keeps the peripheral blood flow more open.
So would that prevent, because like one thing which I've experienced is that your phalanges, your peripheral, like your fingers and toes, essentially, your extremities get like tingly and they get quite sore if you're in cold for even like a couple of minutes initially. Is that, would it help with that as well?
It will, at least based on Marcus and based on my experience and based on the Bohr's effect and the physiology that's happening in there. But that being said, if it's very cold, like I would use gloves, like some kind of shoes and a hat. So that's really a good idea if you're in minus temperatures, like outside, and the water is very cold. When you're not like used to like having your hands there, I usually, if it's like 0 degrees, I don't usually put my hands there because I experienced it this. But maybe this. Winter I'm like going to practice also that and I sometimes I use shoes like these specific like winter swimming shoes and sometimes not, it depends because how I practice for that is that I walk outside barefoot like in the mornings just to get some grounding in the winter time. Not too long because of course it's freezing and you could get a frostbite quite easily. So, but you can like sensitize your skin also for that. But if you want to really have like the benefits, like the physiological benefits without destroying your hands and feet, then of course, like the gloves. excuse, good idea.
I mean, I can see the headline now, like cold therapy expert gets frostbite. It's not what you want.
Yeah, I'm sure like it has happened
quite a
few times. Like, let's jump in.
Yeah, although Wim Hof seems to be immune, but he's just another, he's alien. He's an incredible human being, but.
Yeah.
And when you said cold seems to be a hormetic stressor and you don't want cortisol to spike in the morning, I certainly feel more energized, alert, and actually quite motivated after I've had any kind of cold exposure, to be honest. What's going on there with regards to neurotransmitters and hormones?
Yeah, of course, it depends on the temperature, the time you're spending there. But even a short time period there, it raises noradrenaline, raises cortisol, raises dopamine, beta endorphins, and things like that. The longer you stay, the more the higher elevation for a longer time you're gonna see. So that's I don't know if it's linear, but if there's correlation. So like one study I'm just reading from this study here is that if you spend 14 in a 14 Celsius degree water for 1 hour, 14 isn't even that cold, my opinion. It increases metabolic rate by 350%, norepinephrine 530%, and dopamine by 250%. So if you just extrapolate from that, let's say you spend in 5 degrees Celsius water 5 minutes, that's already like a really, 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 really good exposure. I would think that you're probably going to see pretty similar elevations in these hormones.
I mean, those three things are quite fascinating in and of themselves. Dopamine, for people who are unfamiliar, the neurotransmitter responsible for kind of motivation and drive. That makes sense based on my experience. I definitely feel like it wakes me up and gives me more motivation than a cup of coffee. The noradrenaline part's quite interesting. So that's adrenaline in the brain. What I can also see this being a negative long term if you have repeated exposure. Because like you said, it's a hormetic stressor. Is there a potential to overdo it? Not necessarily from physically, I think your skin and things will be fine, but from a mental point of view, it sounds like it's a lot of stimulus.
Yeah, again, like the hormesis and the rule of that applies here. If you tolerate yourself, let's say you compare it to somebody who hasn't done it at all and you have done it many years and for a long time, probably the levels are not elevated that high as it would for the other person. But that being said, not doing too much of this and just realizing, hey, this is enough for the effects I want. Okay, let's say I spent 2 minutes in 5 degrees Celsius water. That's very good. Even 1 minute, it's really good. If the water temperature is, let's say it's 10 to 12 Celsius, then spending 5 to 10 minutes, that's really good. So you can make it a practice, incrementally increase or lower the temperature or increase the time you're spending there. But it depends on who you ask. If you ask me, I would say more is not more. If you ask the person who wrote the cold book that I have been just reading, he says more is more. But of course, there's a caution. But the more you do, more beneficial the effects. So he described that when he was an hour in the 0 degree water, he felt like a quote unquote Buddha on cocaine. So that's it. an enlightened person on high on these neurotransmitters. That was quite funny.
Yeah, well, if it's dopamine, if you think your dopamine can spike 250% by being in 14 degree water for an hour, imagine 0 degree water for an hour. His dopamine would have been thousands of percent.
Could be. It could be.
Well, yeah, maybe. We don't have evidence for that. But I was just thinking it probably is similar to like what I imagine cocaine would to be like for someone.
Shooting the heck out of all of the transmitters.
Then exactly.
Like, major crash.
Yeah, I wonder if he crashed. Does he say that?
As I remember that, like the effects lasted quite a long time, but of course, like the warming also took quite a long time. And what comes to warming, he has in many points in the book, like warned if you do like this quite hard cold exposure, not to go to heat immediately, but gradually to warm up the body, so not to like shut down. Perfect system suddenly like flood your heart with cold blood, which makes sense. Personally, I haven't noticed any of this, but I would be like, if you get out of water, just spend some time outside, then go inside and not just rushing to the sauna like 80-90 degrees. That's kind of like a shock, but you can also like get used to that. But there's physiological mechanisms that you can actually like knock yourself out.
Right.
Which is not really good.
Yeah, not good. Especially if you're in a situation where the environment might be quite harsh. Imagine knocking yourself out in minus several degrees is unfavorable.
Yeah, for sure. But the knockout in this case would happen if you just like jump into the very hot sauna and knocking yourself out in the sauna. That's maybe even worse.
Yeah.
like if you just fall into the stove, like a super hot stove. So like be mindful, be careful, and like incrementally like increase the level of difficulty in here and just habituate yourself. So that's always a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's like with all these things, isn't it? Like if you exercise, if you go from never running at all to trying running an ultra marathon, your bones, your tendons, your ligaments are not used to that. You will injure yourself.
For sure.
It's like if you go for the extremes of temperature, the likelihood is your body's not going to be prepared. You will likely injure yourself as well.
Well, for sure. And, just about like if let's think about free divers who also do cold exposure. So that could be potentially really like harmful, really dangerous, because there's this autonomic conflict. This is also something I mentioned in my lecture. So this means I'm again reading from here. It's a coincidental stimulation of both divisions of the autonomic nervous supply to the heart, as occurs during cold water submersion with breath holding. So you do cold with breath holding, so it produces a much higher incidence of arrhythmias in young, fit, healthy participants. So in other sense, you have like stimulation of like bradycardic, and then on the other side, like cardiac response. And then when you like stop the hold and begin breathing again, that's when the conflict could be happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, free diving is interesting anyway, because some of them, I remember watching a documentary, I can't remember what it's called. It was on Netflix. I think it's like Hold Your Breath or something. I'm probably butchering that name, but they dive to like 100 meters. And at that temperature, it's going to be extremely cold anyway. It doesn't matter where you're diving in the world. Because the sun doesn't penetrate that far and it'll be pitch black. So I can't imagine the stress it'll have on your body. And that autonomic conflict, for people who do not know what autonomic means, these are responses which you just wouldn't normally think about, breathing, digesting, etc. That happen naturally. As a dedicated listener of my podcast, I'm absolutely sure you're familiar with my enthusiasm for preventative medicine. With preventable chronic diseases now causing 3 out of 5 deaths globally, we need to prioritize health management. Age is the most significant risk factor for chronic diseases, and while we can't alter our age, we can influence how we age on a molecular level. potentially preventing age-related illnesses. This is where the concept of the hallmarks of aging comes into play, with chronic inflammation being a key factor among the 12 hallmarks identified. Glycan age is the first biological age clock to measure chronic inflammation using glycans. Glycans are complex sugar molecules vital for cellular communication that can indicate the risk of 11 diseases up to 10 years in advance. But that's not all. Glycans also reflect your body's response to lifestyle changes, allowing you to actively manage your health. Technologies like these are poised to transform our approach to not only disease prevention, but your own health management, helping to make it more proactive than ever. Visit glycanage.com and use the code FUNCTIONALHEALTH at checkout for an exclusive offer. Take the first step towards a healthier future with Glycan Age. Back to the show.
I have tried it, not diving, but holding my breath in the water, and that your heart rate gets really, really, really slow. It's like, like it, and also the oxygen demand goes lower. And then when you come up, it's getting like a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
So when you go in the cold water, that's and if you hold your breath, it's a really like a bradycardic signal. So just to make like clear, this is like a dual stimulation. Bradycardic means that the heart rate gets slower.
Mm-hmm.
Tachycardic, it's a cardiac response caused by the diving and the cold shock responses. So it leads into a conflict.
Right, that makes sense.
I wish I had some slides to show, but I just have. I'm just trying to explain.
No,
the parasympathetic stimulation. So there's a the cold in itself causes a parasympathetic reflex. Your heart's HRV, it rises, it improves the autonomic what's the word here? You're training the autonomic nervous system,
mm-hmm.
and acutely the HRV increases. Then when you come up, then you begin to rewarm, and it's causing a sympathetic stimulation, and it causes some big higher heartbeat. So, and again, if you hold your breath, that's also a signal. If you try to hold your breath here,
mm-hmm.
eventually it gets slower, and then when you exhale, it again
increases.
Yeah. And there's these two things cause a conflict. So that might cause some errors in the electric system of the heart. Hey, what I'm supposed to do? And then it's tick, 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 ding, tick,
yeah.
Tick, yeah. But yeah. went into nerd stuff here.
Yeah. I think we went really nuanced just then. Really niche.
Yeah.
But it's super fascinating. I mean, we could talk about that for ages.
Of course, this is extreme cases, and the benefits we can also discuss. There are some serious benefits of cold exposure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Let's get into that. One of them, actually, that I've heard, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell me much more about this. There's a preponderance of TikTokers and Instagram influencers talking about brown fat and the conversion of brown white fat to brown fat, which is more mitochondrially dense and metabolically active. How does cold come into this picture?
Yeah, it stimulates, or it is supposed to stimulate the formation of brown fat. But the thing is that if you are actually fat, you have a lot of white adipose tissue,
mm-hmm.
it is very slow. So you would first have to get lean, and then the activation of that brown adipose tissue, it's much on a much more higher level. And let's take an example. Wim Hof,
mm-hmm.
he has very little brown fat. So the effects are not because of brown fat that he can stay there. It's a mental and the breathing. But ideally, the brown fat in the future, why would you do cold as a practice is to increase that to have a metabolic active organ. not like metabolically quote unquote inactive. It's not inactive, but it's not like as active as the brown adipose tissue is, as is white. So you can like train your metabolic system as well, but you would want to get lean first. I don't mean like you have to be like shredded, but just lean, not obese. And then the formation, it's a lot higher.
Okay, that's incredibly interesting. I guess you could use cold from, by way of the evidence that you said before, that increases your metabolic rate as a way to get leaner. And then eventually the benefits will just be different. Yes.
Yeah, and then eventually you would be starting to form brown fat as well. So that's how it would go. So in any case, it's beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're lean or obese, it's beneficial in this sense. If you combine it with calorie restriction and let's say fasting, calorie restriction or intermittent fasting acutely increases this beige fat,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of in the middle of brown fat and white fat. So there's mitochondria, but not as much as in the brown. And you combine both cold exposure and calorie restriction and or fasting, that's even like a better way to increase the brown adipose tissue.
Why? I mean, that's interesting, and I might have to try that. I occasionally do 24, 48 hour, 72 hour fasts over than intermittent fasting. I just think it works better for me. I'll occasionally skip breakfast, but not that regularly, maybe a couple of times a week. But the thing that you said that I found interesting is that Wim Hof doesn't have much brown adipose tissue. What?
Yeah.
Why is that the case? Because the guy's constantly cold.
That's a good question. There's a paper, let's see if I have it. It's called Brain Over Body, a study on the willful regulation of the autonomic nervous system or autonomic function during cold exposure. It's published in 2018. So in this is like a case study of his biology. And it seems, as I mentioned before, that he controls his brain to mediate responses to cold. But brown adipose tissue was not activated. So it wasn't activated in the cold.
Wow. But that's unusual, right?
Probably, yeah. He's not fat, but he's not that lean. But I don't think that's the issue here. It's maybe his physiology is just different. And, he is different. can do stuff normal people just can't do. And I think this could be wrong, but I think he had a brother or something like that that never did cold and had more brown adipose tissue.
Right. Fascinating.
And brown adipose tissue, it's very natural to have. Like when you're newborn, you naturally have it quite a bit. And as a young person, if you're like lean, you should have quite a bit of that. And if you get like very fat, you lose the brown adipose tissue.
And
but you can activate that, yeah.
What are the main benefits of having more BAT compared to white adipose tissue?
Keeps you warm, or should. But the thing is that in Wim's case, it wasn't the brown adipose tissue. It's not having an effect in the actual cold like plunge.
Right, yes.
And I don't think that's the case. You keep yourself warm in other ways, like the carbon dioxide and the breathing and stuff like that, preheating. But when you have a lot of brown fat, you create a lot more heat. So you're metabolically active, like you burn the fat for heat. So that's a really good thing. Also, better blood sugar regulation, insulin sensitivity and things like that.
Yeah, that makes more sense because the mitochondria, obviously, they'll produce heat, but they're also metabolically active, so they'll absorb glucose and use it up. And glycolysis.
And if you think about like this, sorry, I interrupt you. But,
No, don't worry. Carry on.
You know, there are persons that like they can easily stay in very cold rooms. Like I'm one of those. Like we sleep maybe 14, 15 degrees Celsius.
Yeah, that's cold. Yeah.
And I'm fine. Like, I have a normal, like, blanket. My wife has three. I'm not cruel, but the, like he likes, she likes that there's the fresh air. Like, we have the window a little bit open. And we don't want to overheat, like, with electric, like, kind of this radiating things that make the air quality bad and stuff like that. But yeah, we're used to that. And like at the office where I'm, it's pretty damn cold, and I'm on a t-shirt. And it's I think it has a lot to do with the brown fat. And the cold exposure, the practice of that, of course, like thyroid hormones and all these things, metabolic regulators that produce heat. And if you're hypothyroid, that's you're definitely going to get cold.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess your resilience to cold, if you're constantly exposed or frequently have cold exposure, your resilience to that cold is just going to be greater anyway. So you're going to be more comfortable at a colder temperature than the average human being.
Yes. Yes, yes, you can train like for anything, basically. And yeah, I haven't walked in shorts in the winter in the streets. Don't want to be like too extreme, but in my backyard, yeah. But you can keep like common sense as well. You don't have to take this to the extremes like immediately. You get like really good benefits with regular nice practice.
Yeah.
And but if you're a person that wants to stick to your limits, then of course it's possible.
From what but, you were sorry, I'm interrupting you again. I've got so many things which as you're speaking, I'm like more and more questions are coming up in my brain.
Yeah.
But when you're speaking about brown adipose tissue and the density and how it increases your metabolic rate, would it make sense that? We know that cold exposure increases your metabolic rate acutely, but would it make sense that frequent cold exposure, due to the increase in BAT, you would likely increase your basal metabolic rate anyway?
Yes.
That's cool. Do we have data on that, or is that theoretically?
Yeah, there's data. Data, it's related to UCP1, uncoupling protein 1, which is activated in like... the brown adipose tissue function. You can also like activate brown adipose tissue and increase it with different certain supplements called like L-biba.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know, that's something I've been taking like sometimes before exercise, even before cold exposure. Grains of paradise, also a very interesting herb, has similar effects.
Am I right? People use that instead of black pepper? Grains of paradise. I'm making that up.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah, it's a mixture of pepper and ginger, and it's really potent in like thermogenesis. So yeah, thermogenic herbs in general, adaptogenic herbs, if you just want to tolerate the cold better and then have like better functions. My favorites that also like the science shows that there's at least some kind of effect are the Shishandra berry. And sea buckthorn berry. That's also very interesting. Then we have rhodiola. Could be like you could tolerate cold better. L-tyrosine. And amino acid. Very good one as well. So,
yeah. I'm familiar with all of those. I cannot tolerate rhodiola very well. I think it stimulates serotonin production too much.
It has like really... just lowering my table. I've been standing maybe like 2 hours now. So yeah, rhodiola. Some people are very sensitive to rhodiola. Just like it's not the stimulant, but it's kind of is like the different neurotransmitters, serotonin and also like dopamine, and has having an effect on cortisol, even testosterone. Yeah, but it helps.
Yeah. Oh, super interesting. Okay. And then we mentioned cold shock proteins before, but we didn't actually go into it.
Yeah, that's true. Also, like the listener, what the fuck are these guys talking about?
But I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I am too. So that's a good one. So cold proteins, they are only like these RNA, DNA binding proteins. And of course, they are being like formed when there's an actual cold shock, like cold exposure, you're under cold stress. And what they do, they fix these misfolded proteins. So they fix kind of the body, like you have errors in the body, you have what's a misfolded protein? It's not a functional protein. Its 3D structure is not as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
So you're fixing different proteins, and that has also like a genomic effect. And this is interesting because this mechanism is virtually in all mammals and even more like in all organisms. So every organism has a beneficial response to cold. So that's it's pretty important. So
yeah.
That's one of the things. And the maximal activation of these happens if you do cold, like fasted. It's not necessary to do fasted, but I wouldn't do like immediately after eating as well as I wouldn't do sauna either.
Is that because it higher. Shuts down the digestion?
Could be one reason. Also, like the autophagy, what the word? Autophagy,
yeah.
Autophagy. Is that the hardest word in biohacking?
Yeah.
And then when you combine heat and cold, you get like double dose of cold and heat shock proteins. And that's very interesting because they both have different kind of effects. So we're not just talking today about heat because otherwise we are not getting out here ever.
Yep.
We can do that. Another point. But yeah, and also I've been like tinkering, should you do like cold first or sauna and then cold? But the answer seems to be that cold first, then you get the best effects.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating because it seems like if you're warm, for example, in a hot climate, a cold bath, it seems to be colder than if you're in a cold climate and exposed to the cold bath. You know, the contrast.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there is actually any additional benefits from that because it's more of a shock to the system.
Well, based on the research and what I've been writing for the Brazilian Bean book, it seems that it would be wise to start with the cold first get this cold protein and maximal activations. Because let's say you have been in sauna, then 15 minutes, your body temperature is whatever it is, like 39, like mild fever Celsius, and then you go the cold. You need to be there a longer time to get colder, to get this cold stress underway and then to activate cold shock proteins.
Would you shut down the beneficial effects of the cold shock proteins because you're going straight into heat or not?
I think not. There's no research that I've found that actually let's say you have a protocol, like you fast, 3 hours of sauna and cold, what happens? There's just cold studies and heat studies. Why hasn't anybody done or maybe I just haven't found those studies, but I've searched quite a bit. So I don't know the answer. Does it shut down? Is it, it's diminishing? I don't think once these proteins are being formed, they suddenly go away when you go to heat.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're just going to produce the heat shock proteins, which are different ones.
Okay, that's interesting. Because I'm wondering for people at home, if they wanted to do this, they didn't have access to necessarily a sauna, whether they could do a cold plunge, ice in a bath, and then just a hot bath afterwards. Would that work?
Yeah. For cold, yeah, for sure.
Of course,
but you're not getting like the heat.
Because it wouldn't be as much. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay.
For example, yesterday I was... So I mentioned after work, I just went to the cold bath, like cold turkey, spent there, I don't know, I didn't count, maybe 5 minutes or something like that. It was +7. And then I have an infrared sauna. And then I went there and I tried to get the sweat But after 40 minutes sitting there, I was like, okay, I'm not sweating today because I went pretty cold. So that's interesting. But I got warm. So it's after the cold, it's important to get warm. And you can do it different ways. Like let your body heat itself, or you can do like very slow push-ups, concentrated breathing, and of course, like nice warm shower and sauna. Like whatever you do, the shivering, it's not necessary, because there's a non-shivering thermogenesis that you want to aim for. You don't need the shivering. The shivering usually happens when you get a little, like, mild hypothermic effect.
Okay.
But if you're not used to the cold, then usually people shiver quite a bit.
Yeah. I remember the health optimization summit. I think I was using the Monk ice bath. I was in there like 4 minutes and I shivered a bit afterwards. So definitely not used to it.
Yeah. It's of course, it's normal, but... then again, you can do these different breathing practices before that. I think the summit itself was pretty stressful. You probably have been breathing a bit shallow.
Yeah. And that was 2 degrees as well. Active. So it's quite cold.
It's cold. Yeah. Yes. So you can prepare yourself. And maybe you were there a bit too long.
Yeah, maybe. I need to build up. I'm not superhuman like you yet. But we'll get there. We will get there.
It's a definition of a superhuman. Everybody can be their own superhuman. So it's a
that's a nice way of putting it. Yeah,
it's like you don't necessarily need to compare yourself. Of course, that's natural to compare yourself to others, but it's not necessary. For a developing child, it is necessary, because that's kind of how you see yourself related to others. But when you're grown up and maybe established yourself, and then you're just, okay, let's just measure myself and see how I do.
Mm.
But it's, of course, it's hard. Like, this guy does that. Huh? How does he do that? Like,
It's very hard to check your ego at the door. That's what I think. I'm in my 30s and I'm still competitive, so I think it's just part of
me
now.
That's okay.
Yeah,
it's okay too. So it's nothing wrong with that as well. So I'm too, definitely. But catching yourself every now and then. Hey, actually, why am I doing this? Is this for someone else or for me? It's always a good question.
Yeah.
Am I doing like this to show off for somebody? Or just like to feel better, to be healthier.
Yeah, and I think the latter is the most important, right?
Do I want to lower inflammation, reduce muscle soreness, activate my immune system?
Yeah, these are all the benefits.
Yeah.
I mean, let's get into that. We've been talking, going down all sorts of avenues so far. What are the key benefits that people use cold therapy for? Because I've heard like... mental health claims, a lot of people wild swim in the UK, especially around winter time, to benefit their mental health, especially with the darker nights. What have you seen? What does the science say?
Well, yeah, we can begin with mental health. It's definitely preventing them from depression and anxiety, like all these like typical mental health problems. When you get an increase in dopamine and these neurotransmitters, that's an immediate effect. Like for many, the anxiety has been like number one thing. Many have cured their depression just by activating and doing cold therapy on a regular basis. Wow. So it's pretty incredible on the mental side. Then of course, many do it to decrease some kind of inflammation. There's like very extreme cases of like rheumatoid arthritis and like these very hard conditions that have a lot of pain. So pain alleviation and inflammation, reducing that. Post-workout, not like immediately after, but what's like based on the science at this point of time, 4 hours after the workout, it's good windows to like let the hormetic stressor adaptations that the exercise does to actually take place. Like you want to increase the reactive oxygen species. You want to increase the inflammation. You want to cause some trauma. You don't want to let's say you do a resistance training session and then you jump immediately to ice bath. You're kind of like diminishing the return of your investment on destroying your body. If you're in competition, like let's say you're a CrossFit athlete and you have many sprints and stuff, like you have many, what's the right word? Many events on a day, let's say like 3 to 4. Then, of course, you would want to cool down your system, reduce the inflammation as much as possible, reduce the pain as much as possible to be like performing the best. And there's like the different, like before exercise, some people say that if you do a little bit of cold, you actually perform better. But I found papers that actually making it worse. So maybe it's about the duration and how cold it is.
And maybe the intensity of the exercise itself.
Yeah, that too. So
I understand the exercise thing completely. So you said a 4-hour window in between the exercise and the cold therapy, and that's enough to get the metabolic adaptations that are shutting down the benefits. With the mental health side, you mentioned reducing inflammation. I had a psychiatrist on the podcast, she was a psychologist called Kimberly Wilson, talking about nutritional psychiatry, but particularly inflammation in the brain being the underlying root cause for a lot of depressive ailments. Not everything, but certainly many of them. Do you think cold therapy is reducing inflammation in the brain? And that's one of the avenues that is beneficial?
Yes, I do. And that's a big thing, like general inflammation in the body, also in the brain. I would have to look at specific like papers for that, but it definitely does like doing something as well. And as we know, in many like let's say depressive patients, there is an increase in neuroinflammation, and especially like in the brain. So that is one aspect of the thing. It's not everything, but for sure it's something.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. And like in terms of
awesome.
Awesome.
It's awesome. Give me support then, yeah.
I was gonna say, so cold is like, when we say cold, it's like almost subjective. But what people at home, they might be thinking, what temperature does it need to be? Like the cold, what's the frequency and how long do we need to be in it for? Is there like a calculation that you can do for this? I know it will vary from person to person, but
for sauna. By the way, it's sauna, not sauna.
Sauna.
It's sauna.
It is a Finnish term, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes. The sweet spot seems to be 4 times per week. That's for sauna. But for cold, I don't know if it's that straightforward because I don't think it has been that systematically like investigated and compared. Like these are robust studies compared to 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 5 6 and 7 days per week of sauna, and there's this curve. Hey, so like 4 seems to be the sweet spot. But let's say you combine sauna and cold 4 times per week. That's something that I think it's doable. That's something I do personally. Like sometimes I do more of the cold and maybe at different intensities, not every time as hard or like as long and or pushing myself. And just, you know, I do cold shower every day, but it's not like the stimulus, it's more of a like a refreshing thing. So you'd have to stay quite a long time in the cold shower to get similar benefits.
Yeah, I mean, cold showers are interesting because they're much harder to, because everyone's different shapes and sizes. You don't know the intensity that the cold is coming on you. Where's it hitting you on your body? So I guess the effects of a cold shower there are so many different variables. When you know if you're in a cold plunge and it comes up to your shoulders, you're in a cold plunge and it comes up to your shoulders. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, sure. That's exactly it. But still, beneficial. But to your question, I don't have like, hey, do this and you're gonna win. Anyhow, you're gonna win if you just do it even once a week.
Mm-hmm.
That's like better than nothing. Definitely gets you adapted at least a little bit. But if you do it like every now and then, you're not getting the adaptation effects.
Right. Yes, I understand that. Dave Asprey came up with something. I listened to him on a podcast recently, and he was talking about keeping like almost having an ice cold bowl and then just dipping your face in for like 30 seconds because there's lots of mitochondria around your forehead and et cetera. Is that something which would be beneficial? I guess it'd be more for like cognitive function, noradrenaline would still probably spike. But you're obviously not getting the full body effects.
It's beneficial for the nervous system. I don't know if it has anything to do with the mitochondria, but you have like a trigeminal nerve, which is innervating like basically the facial structure, and that's connected to the vagus nerve. And it's if you put your face under the cold, it activates the vagus nerve. And that's actually something I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, what I used to do and what I still actually do. When I go off the cold shower, I put cold water in the sink and then I just put my face there and hold like breath for maybe 30 seconds, 60 seconds or something like that. You're not going to get the bradycardic or the conflicts like in this, but it feels amazing. If you don't have time, but just do this, if you don't like to go to cold shower, but just like sink your face, has an effect. It definitely will not stimulate cold shock proteins, but it has a beneficial autonomic nervous system effect, like a parasympathetic effect, the vagal activation. Or you can put even your hands there. That also has beneficial effect.
Your hands? So just your hands?
Yes. Yes.
I mean, that's very accessible to people. Just put your hands in ice cold water for a minute.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom. Done.
Like 30 seconds. It sounds crazy, but you feel it.
Well, that is a low-hanging fruit. Like, I could definitely do that on a daily basis with no problem at all. I think it's a lot for some people to put their face in ice cold water. They have a, you know.
It doesn't have to be ice cold. It's enough if it's like 10 degrees Celsius or just that it feels cold.
Mm-hmm.
That's enough. If it's ice cold, you might freeze your forehead. Like it doesn't need to be ice cold.
You might freeze your forehead.
But get this brain freeze, like this effect.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's like horrible.
I don't know how the free divers do that, like without a cap. There was an interview in the book that I'm reading, like the cold master Marcus, but he interviewed like these free divers, and they just told that they're getting used to that. Of course, they feel the freeze and their forehead gets numb, like their whole body gets numb, but they don't get like hypothermic. So that's the thing here. But if we come back to the facial, like just put in the quite cold water, like 30 seconds, good to go.
Amazing.
That's also like the phase one. If you think about the cold exposure training phases, putting your hands on face for the cold water for 30 seconds, that's number one. Then number two would be cold shower after warm shower, or you can do like contrast showers, like 30 seconds warm, 30 seconds cold.
Yes.
Then number three would be cold shower, like no warm shower, like before that, just start your day or finish your evening. And, but if you're like, I wouldn't do that if you're like highly stressed, sleep deprived, and then you just jump in the cold. You probably, you'll feel, I don't know how you'll feel, maybe like a shock or a refreshment, but that's, it's getting too high on the cortisol side for sure. And the number four is like cold water immersion, cold plunge, or winter swimming. So this is like the four four stages of practicing this.
That makes perfect sense. And then stage seven, an hour in a fridge.
Just get me out here. Like, okay, bye.
Ollie, this has been absolutely fantastic. We've covered a heck of a lot here. Is there anything else that you think we should talk about before we wrap up?
Yeah, just keep like things that are fun. Like if you're starting to do all these challenges and habits and you're like cranking your jaws and doing it for someone else, mm-hmm. then just back off a little bit. Hey, I need to do this for myself. This needs to be fun, at least most of the time. And just keep doing it. Like just keep practicing and creating the habit. Then it becomes a lot easier. So that's my advice on cold exposure. You know, basically everything. Like if there's no fun in it, I don't think it's worth doing.
Love that.
Yeah.
Ollie, I know we're coming up on time, but I have one more question for you. Before I ask it, can you please tell everyone where they can find you and what exciting projects you have coming up?
You can find me at bikercenter.com. So that's our portal, our web store, basically portal for everything. And if you want to see myself in social media, I'm quite random. I might go 2 weeks without posting anything and then suddenly have a burst of inspiration. It's at Olli Sovijärvi. So that's Instagram. I don't use Facebook that much anymore. But usually that's some Instagram fun contents. And go to resilientbeing.com. resilient/being.com. Mm-hmm. So there's our forthcoming book. You can pre-order it. Hopefully we get it out sometime next year. It's a huge project. I don't know the pages, how many there's at the moment, 850, but probably it's going to be shrinking a little bit and just editing and stuff like that. But that's also covering cold exposure and everything basically around resilience. And bikersummit.com, our events. We have a 10-year anniversary event in Helsinki next July. That's a must. Like a special thing going on. And yeah, bikersummit.com. So I think this is something a lot to digest for. And of course, our books, you can find everything in the bikercenter.com.
Amazing. And I'll link to everything that you've said in the show notes for everyone to make it easier. So Ollie, one last question. What is the most impactful health change that you have made in your life and why? One.
Sleep. I don't know. It's a bit boring, but I was in a situation that's already 10 plus 12 years ago. I slept 5.5 hours on average per day and trained too much, basically did everything too much. And eventually I cranked up my sleep time and now sleep quality. And so that's essential. That's the key. If anything else can fail, but if the sleep fails, fails, and then everything's a lot more miserable and the effects are just so immense. So concentrate on the sleep and after that comes everything else.
I couldn't agree with you more. Fantastic. Ollie, I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it's been to speak to you, man. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I wish you the best of luck with all your events and projects. And I do hope that we can do this again soon, my friend.
For sure. Thanks, Ben. And it was a pleasure. And hopefully your listeners had a good time and learned something new.
Thank you for listening to the Functional Health Podcast. You can find links to everything that we talked about today in the show notes. If you have a second, please consider leaving a 5-star rating on iTunes. It really does make a huge difference and helps get this valuable information out and reach more people. Don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date and know whenever I release a new episode. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, or our website, and all questions are welcome. As always, thanks to Joss Aurelia for all the editing, and thank you all for your support.